Awesome.
All right. So we're on, bro. We're on. So welcome to the Jackson Johnson podcast. If you're watching this from other places, we've got Ben Patrick here, or at Knees Over Toes Guy, which I like to call him. And welcome to the podcast, Ben.
Thanks, man. It's an honor to be here with you.
I always have to remind myself, like, your name, because when I talk to people on Instagram for the first, you know, I met you through kind of like social media. And Knees Over Toes Guys, it's really catchy. So, like, I'm always like, oh, check out my friend Knees Over Toes Guy. And they're like, oh, what's his name? I'm like, that's his name.
Hey, that you could legally change my name to Knees Over Toes Guy. I wouldn't complain.
You'd be like, it's all good. That's what we're doing.
So exactly.
Before I get into the questions, let's give people a bit of a hook. Like, what do you do? What is your job at the moment? Let's say we're in an elevator. You got 30 seconds. Give me and the listeners, what do you do? What type of guy are you? What do you do?
That elevator conversation, I own a gym. I'm a trainer. And I happen to have a unique take on how to train the joints. And so I specialize in training people around the world outside of my gym through awesome. Online training. Yep.
Awesome. And so that's great. And what's good about this interview is I know a little bit about you already. Sometimes when I interview people for the podcast, like the last guy at Biohacking Secrets, Anthony DiClemente, I actually got him to check out your Instagram because I said to him that even though he's a biohacker and even though you have no idea what biohacking really is, you're kind of biohacking the body because you're doing these weird exercises that old personal trainers and still personal trainers today be like, oh, don't put your knees too far over your toes when you squat. And I'm like, that was always weird for me. So I said to him in the last podcast that, like, you're biohacking the body, but you don't even realize. It's like you're hacking the system by finding better ways to train, to make joints stronger and make us as humans stronger.
Well, thanks, man. That's a hell of a compliment. And yeah, it's, I guess you're right. That's what I wake up every morning to do, to try to figure out, you know, solutions to the problems that exist in training.
So what really blew me away and what really wanted me to get you onto the podcast is not because of how good you are as a trainer as a coach, not just a trainer, like, you know how to convert something that you're doing at your gym to a worldwide thing. And that's very hard to do. And I've actually, to be fully honest, struggled with creating a really good online program because I'm so good one-on-one. That's my specialty.
Yeah.
Like working with athletes, celebrity style trainers, you know, people that have a lot of money or a lot of big problems. One-on-one, I really know how to focus and work on my life coaching self-development side. But it took me a long time to convert that into an ebook. And even the ebook, I'm like, I want more. I want like a video thing. So what blew me away with you is you're so focused on your dream. You're so focused on the dream of just helping as many people as possible that were in the situation that you used to be in, which was injured, knee surgery, unhappy. You just want to, that's your sole goal. And you do it for such a minimum fee for your monthly coaching that it blows me away because I go to other people that are less value online and they're asking for hundreds and hundreds and thousands of dollars to do their online course or a seminar. And yours is just like, such high value. And I'm like, I know now why it's successful. And it's only the early days. Like, people are going to look back at this podcast, look back at you from these days and go, oh, I knew Ben before he was famous. You know what I mean?
That's awesome, man. I appreciate that. But yeah, it's from day one when I set it up, I knew I just had to make it a price that I would have afforded when I started having problems, you know? So I was told don't do it for anything less than $99 a month. And I said, I'm going to do that in half because I would mow lawns every weekend. I would go to the nearby like Muscle Beach gym or a beach town. And while these rich people would work out, I'd wash their car and make money.
Wow.
And just, you know, just whatever I could. And I was spending that money, about $50 a month of that I would spend on the latest jump program or the latest knee program, or I'd save up to hire a trainer who would then give me absolutely nothing, you know? So I just knew that I couldn't sell out. And I have a a belief that things will work out if you go with what you know is the right thing to do, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Ben, what's cooler than, you know, what you're doing with people is actually your story. And catching a little glimpse of your story with, it was actually the YouTube video you did for your favorite supplement company about a story of you in high school and stuff. And me being a man that's studying self-development at the moment, in the last 2 years, I've really stripped back my ego side, you know, coming from a guy that had, you know, close to 400,000 followers when he was 23, 24, to then realizing that that doesn't actually mean much if you're not, you know, 100% honest with your values. So me right now is going through like, how do we bring the ego away and how do we be honest and tell stories? And your story and that little clip really grabbed me, and it affected me in a way that I think it affected a lot of people. So what's more important than, you know, like what type of program we're doing, I want to dive deep into your story. I want to go back a little bit and I want to ask the questions maybe other people haven't asked. So I want to go back to the earliest memories, your earliest memories in, let's say, primary school or high school, you know, early memories, and where you, like, where were you, you know, late primary school, you know, when we start turning into a young man, like,
yeah, you know,
we call it grade 6, 7, 8 or whatever. I think you guys have middle school. You were hitting puberty, you were turning into a man, but the things weren't going the way on the movies or the TV series or like what other people did. Also being in a place like America. So let's start there. Like, what sports were you doing? What were your values back then? What were you interested in? Let's go there.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, really from like the time I could remember, I became obsessed with basketball, and I'm not sure exactly why I gravitated to that sport, because my dad wasn't some basketball player, you know. I just picked that sport, and I was so obsessed with that sport. But when you're 4 years old, that's when I was already like, all my relatives knew, for you get Ben something basketball at age four. I started at age four. I decided I was going to start working really hard and saving up money and not spend a dime. So I went no toys from age 4 to 7, and I spent $1,000. I saved up $1,000 to buy a Michael Jordan basketball card, his rookie card that was worth $1,000. I don't know what I was thinking, but you could see I had this sort of like obsessive personality to find something and try to be really good at it. But when you're four, you don't realize you're going to be too short to be a basketball player. You don't realize you're going to be too slow to be a basketball player. You don't realize that your dad could never touch the rim, let alone dunk. So, and my dad graduated high school weighing 55 kilos. Okay, 120 pounds. At about 6 foot tall, like, you know, around my height. So he was rail thin and I was rail thin, but it wasn't the rail thin athletic guy. It was like the rail thin slow guy. So I just became, you know, obsessed. Once I started having that realization around age 8 or 9, I realized, oh shit, like everyone has a physical advantage on me, you know? So that's when I started really diving in. And it's fun to look back at this because you're right. No one's asked me back this far. You know, so that's when I really started diving in. And again, at that age, you think it's simple. You buy a program to jump higher and you'll jump higher. But it didn't quite work out for me that way. And starting 10, 11, I know by 12, like I just had like full on like chronic knee problems.
Even at the age of 12?
That's when it was just the full on chronic knee problems by 12. I started having symptoms at 10, 11. And by 12, even I was aware of it. Like my knees were in a really bad place.
Because you were so focused, you seem as similar to me.
Yep.
Addictive personality taking it to the extreme.
Yeah.
And sometimes what that means is this part of your life is so heightened that the other part of your life's quite struggle. So you were so involved in sport, particularly basketball, And it would have made you even more obsessed because you knew you weren't genetically blessed. You knew you were just a young white guy playing basketball against black guys and athletic other athletic guys.
Yep.
And then you would have been even more obsessed because you want to prove everyone wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I had my hero was a guy named John Stockton who played in the 80s and 90s and even actually into the early 2000s. And because he was a 6 foot tall white guy who somehow made it.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he would wake up at like 4 or 5 a.m. before school when he was like 9, 10, 11, you know, and do insane amounts of practicing. So I just started copying what he would do. And I have a famous story, but it's true. I would write down for myself, what would John Stockton do? And I would put my alarm just outside of arm's reach. And it had one of those like glow in the dark things. So yeah. So at like 4 a.m., like this thing would be beeping. The last thing I want to do is wake up, but I have to look right at this thing I wrote for myself. What would John Stockton do? And I'd wake up and I'd go dribbling two basketballs through my neighborhood with ankle weights on and all sorts of shenanigans for hours and hours. You know, I was the crazy neighborhood kid running around, pulling tires, parachutes, always practicing basketball. I mean, it was completely obsessive. And you're right. I honestly didn't build any close friendships, like not any true friends, you know. I put my goals ahead of so many other things. And because the body, you know, the mind, you could want to be in certain fields and you could just study and get smarter, but your body has to recover. So I really screwed up my body by overtraining it before it had matured enough to be able to handle it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to dive in a little bit deeper into like, how did that affect your, you know, it's really important at that age. Like when you're not on the court, it doesn't mean you're going to be cool just because you can juggle, you know, you can, you know, run around with the ball. So like for me, for example, I wasn't like fitness model, bodybuilding guy like I am now. And I still cringe when I say that because I definitely don't see myself as like a top model or a really good bodybuilder. But I proved everyone wrong. I went to America. I came third in Australia for nationals twice. Wow. I'm getting paid to do photo shoots for brands and stuff now. But when I was young, when I was very young, I'm not even going to lie, all the way through primary school and high school, I was ugly duckling, short, like, you know how you said your dad was like 55 kilos or 120 pounds? That's me, bro.
Yep.
Year 11, I started doing boxing. Like year 10, year 11, I started doing boxing because I was very insecure. And I grew up in a country town in Australia, which they actually call Helltown. The nickname for the town is called Helltown because it has a low economic kind of structure to it. And there's not enough opportunity for jobs, especially because farming started dying. So what people do, they fight and they steal and like, it's not the hood, but an Aussie version of it. There was some parts like that. So insecure and everything. I remember I weighed in after I started training and putting muscle on. I weighed in for 61 kilos for my first amateur boxing fight.
Holy shit.
Super skinny. I had braces all the way through high school. I remember my nose was way more developed than the rest of my body. So I was like getting called big nose from like people's like little brother and sister would say it. Cause young kids are honest. They're like, why does he have such a big nose? And so I did struggle a little bit, but the one thing I always did was I was very, very, very obsessed with sport to the point where I would play every sport and I would come top placing for nearly every different sport. Maybe not like shot put and javelin, which was like pure muscle back then. But like I would do short distance, long distance. I would throw something. I would jump, high jump, long jump. I'd play soccer, as much stuff as I could. But I could tell. I was like, I'm not genetically fast. I'm not genetically strong. I butterfingers when I play football and stuff. Like I have to really work on my craft.
Yeah.
Let's go back to your story because that really fired something up in me, realizing like we are from different parts of the world. And the reason why we're chatting right now is because in a way we are very similar in some parts, obsessive personality to help people and to reach out to people through the social media. So instead of using social media in a bad way, where some people are like, oh, social media has negative, blah, people putting this up, we're using the power of social media to spread love for sports and for recovery and tell our story. So
yep.
When you were fully obsessed with basketball and you're doing all that extra training, what was it like being around girls? What was it like being around large groups? Were you more of an
totally nervous
introvert?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Totally nervous. Like completely nervous around girls. Totally scared of like speaking up in large groups. I was the guy who would have a crush on a girl and never say anything about it ever and live years regretting that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I think being, man, for me, when I turned 14, I remember going to a trainer to try to like bulk me up. I weighed 92 pounds. So at age 14. So that's, I mean, that's 40, not even 42 kilos.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. And he was like checking his scale to make sure it was right. You know, I wore like baggy basketball clothes just to try to hide, you know, how skinny I was. So that definitely didn't help. And then right when I started like getting into the weight room, which I didn't, anything I did in the weight room, my knees were in such a bad state that it didn't help my basketball, but it did start to like, I could see like upper body changes happening. And that was starting to give me more confidence. And then the worst acne ever. I went to a school, like a big public school of, I don't know, like 2,000-3,000 people. And like, I'm pretty sure I had like the worst acne there when I was 16, 17. I mean, it was so bad. And that, you know, you're a guy I can talk to about this openly and you're not going to judge me, but it scarred my face. But my face, I don't think is like terribly scarred, but it really hit me mentally because after the acne, I could see the scars and I don't know how I got started on it, but I started using like makeup, like cover up to sort of try to fill in the scarring almost to make it look like there was no scars.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually counted at one point, I had gone a full year without leaving my house without makeup on.
Wow.
So like the acne really did a number on me. You know what I mean? And at that point in my mind, it was kind of like my options were basically, because in my mind, I was this hideous beast. You know what I mean? That no girl would be attracted to. But in my mind, if I could somehow become like a famous basketball player, then I'd still be able to get a girl. Yeah, that was literally, someone would learn how to love me or something like that if I became, you know what I mean, successful enough. And even from the time I was a little kid, I remember telling my mom, like my goals were always like, I wanted to be successful so I could adopt a bunch of dogs that were going to, or, you know, or donate to children who need, you know, I was always like, I never had like material possessions that I wanted. And to this day, that's not what drives me. I still don't have like any material possessions I could name that I want. So, that's kind of what I thought about is like, if I could somehow become successful and really a charitable person, you know what I mean? Then some girl would like me. And that's the world I lived in. I didn't have any true friends, you know? I mean, here and there I did, but I was such an introvert and didn't recognize back then the value of that, you know, and kind of had that personality that like, that people were always against me or, you know what I mean? Or didn't like me or, and so I would take it. I didn't have the confidence really to like have a tight group of friends.
Well, it's so, so obvious in this day and age that the way people judge people, it's proven over and over again. Doesn't matter if the person says they're the most amazing soul searching person. I can tell you right now, especially in high school, in the first 7 seconds of someone seeing you and the first word you speak, which if you're already coming across a bit timid and introvert and then you speak, you're not going to speak with like a very dominant voice or very loud, you're going to come across very low. They're going to then just straight away, like, oh, he's just like, what do they call it? Like a nerd, or, you know, like, you know, just not a popular kid. And yep. That would have compounded as you got older, the acne, you're like, oh, great. So I was already skinny, tall, you know, like weighed nothing. And now acne, like, great. Just thanks God, you've just kept me up. But what's so cool is you can look back now and go, well, you know, even if some of the listeners don't believe in God, I always say that whatever is controlling the system, whatever is controlling the good luck
yeah.
and the good karma, that yep. that thing said to you, like, hey, Ben, we're going to send you some challenges. And if you can get through these challenges, we're going to create a mindset and a coach and, you know, a husband and a friend that can get through to nearly anyone and change lives. I want to dive more into the injuries. The reason why I yep. want to dive into the injuries is I'm struggling right now, and we've spoke back and forth as you're actually my coach, and I yep. want to thank you so much for taking me on board and looking after me, because my injuries and what I have is very much close to, I still believe it's nearly close to impossible to fix me. But with your guidance and just your straight out, like every time you speak to me, you're like, we're going to get it done. We're going to get it done. I'm going through a lot of injuries. L4 to L5 to S1 bulging discs posteriorly, to the point where I've seen two doctors and they said it looks like I've had a car accident. And I said, I had a motorbike accident and I hit the island. I was on my motorbike and I was racing my friend. I'm going to be honest. I never used to be honest about what actually happened in the accident, but
yeah.
I was racing a friend. I was in a road bike, you know, and I thought I was cool. That's when I had it, like, heap of followers early, before, like, back then having a few hundred thousand followers meant like you
are
fucking famous. This is like
yeah.
2012 or 13 or whatever. Wow. And I got myself a motorbike and a fast car and wow. I'm racing my friend, and I just finished training legs actually, which was stupid to be riding a bike. I had no gear on because the gym was right across, like just down the road from where we were living. I was all pumped up on pre-workout back in the day when Jack 3D was a thing. Like,
oh yeah.
Like I was like basically on the Jack 3D speed. I'm racing.
Oh, yeah.
I try to get in front of him. He's in a pretty quick BMW as well. And then I look up and it's happened so fast. We're at the lights and the lights were red. And I'm like, I got to stop. So as I tried to lock the brakes on, I didn't have ABS. So the back brake just locked up and the back tire just full MotoGP across the side of the road. I'm doing like 90 or 100 in like third gear pinned or second gear pinned. I can't remember. It was just bad. I got down to maybe 60 or 70 Ks, which still felt so fast. I hit an island and jumped the bike a little bit. And then I put my foot down on the second part of the road that I hit. Completely folded in my ankle, ruptured my cancaneus bone, like in, and pulled all the ligaments on the side. But I think when I put my legs down, as I hit, you know, maybe going 30, 40 Ks or whatever, it went up into my lower back, and I already had bulging discs. So I think that just pushed out even more. So I've got the bulging discs. My ankle will never be the same. It's like I wake up with, every time I wake up in the morning, I have to go through like walking on it like crack, crack, crack because of the arthritis. And I never got surgery. I don't really believe in surgery, so it's still got problems with it. And I just recently broke, like about a year and a half ago, I broke my big toe playing indoor soccer. And not having the flexibility and the flexion in the big toe just started wrecking my hip. And basically, I've got a world of injuries. But I mean, this, I can relate this so much towards like when you were young and you were overtraining and all these things started happening. Now my left knee has runner's knee. This bone sticks out just below my knee and it's like really swollen and it's painful. Like I can barely do yoga. Like yoga's still hurting. So
wow.
I want to go back. Like that's why I'm so passionate about your injuries, because I'm dealing with stuff at the moment. And I used to try to hide that I've got injuries because online, on social media, Instagram, photo of me with my shirt off and, you know, like, well, I look good. Like why should I be complaining? But the truth is someone can look really great, but be not so fucking great. You know, they can be in a lot of pain. So let's go back to your injuries and be specific, like which parts, like your legs, knees and ankles, were they just really, really bad?
Yeah. So my knees got super painful and super stiff. I remember one moment when I was 13 and it was like a mock fire drill. And I was the last one who could get out of the building. And it really just scared the shit out of me to realize that my knees were so painful and so stiff. It would take me so much time to warm up to play basketball that I didn't think about in regular life that like I could die if there was a fire or something. Like for a 13-year-old kid, it was insane how far my knees had deteriorated. And by the time I had surgeries when I was 17, 18, they were saying that I'd had stuff that should have been operated on like 3-4 years prior. So probably that means around like 14-ish, I was playing from then on with torn stuff in my knees. To this day, I was told, some years back that I had like a fully torn ACL and I never operated on my ACL. So I don't know what's going on in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to speak particularly about, what do you think caused, there might be people out here listening going, look, yep, my knees are pretty bad, or I have a similar injury to Jackson, or I can relate, yep, to Ben. This is what the podcast, yep, is about. Like,
I'm what? About to simplify it. Simple is, I just believe simplicity is truth.
Yeah.
Okay. And we see injuries all the time. And you're a guy with phenomenal muscles, right? Yet you still have pain. I was a kid that you could have considered, at least when I was like, you know, warmed up. And if you watched me playing basketball, you could have considered, this kid is a fitness machine. I could probably run so many miles without even slowing down, right? But on the inside was hurting so bad. So here's the simple point that I think anyone listening to this could take, is that there's things in your body which cause the output, and then there's things in your body which absorb that. So just because you have this godly body that can output so much, but how much can you absorb, right? So that's the same for me. For me, it was more in an endurance capacity because I didn't really have the muscles built up for explosion. You know what I mean? But you have, great leg muscles and all these things, right? But can still get pains. And we've seen some of the best athletes in the world still have these recurring problems with their joints. So the harder you work, the more genetically gifted you are, whatever it is, if it causes you to be able to run fast, to jump, to explode, whatever that may be, to express that energy, well, what is then going to absorb that energy? So my whole system has almost become a system of, how do I go into the weight room and train only the shit that absorbs all the impact? You see what I mean? Like I work out my tibialis muscles like pretty much every day of my life, you know? And I didn't know what those were. And I would have thought that was a waste of time because that muscle doesn't put out any power. It only helps you absorb the power. You see what I mean? So that became my entire philosophy. And I remember making my mission to figure out, how do I bulletproof the body? That became like my key word, because it got to a point where it was so bad that it was like, I would have given $1 million and spent the rest of my life doing whatever I had to do if I could just play basketball without any fucking pain. You know what I mean? I just wanted to play the game. And that's what I started coming, oh shit, this thing and this thing and this thing. And it's all these muscles that handle the force, not the ones that cause the force. And this got me to the point where I could play basketball again, but it still didn't occur to me I could be a great athlete. This has happened slowly over time of continuing to do this system, that now I can actually express a ton of energy and I can dunk and I can do all these things that honestly I just couldn't even have dreamed of, because I think the fact that I'm never experiencing that pain when I run, when I jump, my body lets me put out what I have. And then as a result of that, it adapts back, able to jump a little bit higher. But I think every time you jump that there's any pain, I think your body holds back just a little bit, you know? And so we see most athletes, their jump peaks at maybe 18 to 21 years old, and then it slowly drifts down, whereas mine has done the opposite. And look, you know, you and I are talking together for a reason, and And if I'm not afraid to share the truth of having makeup on my face, look, I'm not afraid to say that I just don't think there's anyone else on the planet who has gone from as low of a vertical as I had to as high of a vertical as I have now. But I spent my whole life trying to increase my vertical and it never worked. And now I've spent the last 10 years trying to absorb what I had. And now I have the vertical. Isn't that interesting? So this is where I'm at. I stumbled into being a performance coach who now has numerous times I've helped guys jump a foot higher than they used to be able to just by having them follow my footsteps. It was never by veering from that path, never by getting lured into the quote unquote performance training, always by focusing on the decelerators, the shock absorbers, and just following that path, plus going out and actually trying to express it. And it's just kept working. So that's where I am now. You know, I've stumbled into being a performance coach when really all I try to do is get people out of pain. And even the guy who's not in pain, I just try to get him even more able to prevent against pain, get an abundance of protection against pain. And then he ends up being able to express more force.
A really great analogy for that, which I was thinking about all that time, is a lot of people know about cars. So you have a performance car or a track car, and you put this massive engine in it, and you like go so fast around the track. The car that has a better suspension and tires will beat you on a proper track.
Yep.
Because this big engine loses control, crashes. That's like losing control, getting an injury, losing control. The bones and the ligaments are taking more of the impact than what the muscles are because our suspension wasn't trained. Our suspension and our drivetrain wasn't trained. We just kept making the engine bigger, kept making the quads bigger, kept making the glutes bigger, but not looking at the deceleration muscles, the control muscles.
Exactly.
Really, really interesting. This is something that I've always wanted to ask you just for myself, even if sometimes listeners are like, well, where are they going with this? Is like, what was the first little thing that you tried in the gym that helped your knees? Because I'm in a lot of knee and ankle pain. What was the first little shift? Because I think I have to start at a very like baby level because there's a lot of pain in there.
Yeah. I'd have to say that it was just the concept of doing things in reverse. So my whole knee system now is built on this foundation principle of getting really, really good in reverse. And we start that in whatever means we have. But I mean, like, when guys come to the gym with me to be trained and stuff, I get them working harder pulling sleds backwards than they've like just about ever worked in their life. Like they don't realize like just how intense I'm expecting them to tell their body, get stronger in literal rewind of the motions that hurt you. And then boom, I capitalize on that with strength exercises. But that was the first concept that really hit me because again, I'm an obsessive guy, right? So for me, it was like, you know, once I hit upon that, I just went to town. And I think that's why I responded so well. I think the obsessive personality is what screwed me so hard. And the obsessive personality is what's rewound my body back so hard. Is that like no one was going to push and suffer through more burn in reverse than me. And to this day in my gym, no pro athlete, no millionaire pro athlete has beat my track record times in our sleds in reverse.
That's fucking incredible, eh? Because it's your thing. Like you started literally from the bottom, as they say, and worked your way to the point of no knee pain. Was there steps? Was there a part where like you fixed the knee pain and then you diverted away from the reverse training?
Oh yeah. And
came back.
Yeah, honestly, it was a constant cycle of that for a couple years to fully like look at things and get honest with myself. You know what I mean? And stop trusting everything I was being told by others and be willing. It's very hard to be willing to go, you know what, maybe I can trust myself. You know what I mean? And it even took me, I don't want anything to turn into negativity, but like, you know, I thought I would still run a somewhat normal gym, but it even took me cleaning house of my entire staff at my gym and getting other people around, you know what I mean, who were willing to look at things as crazily as I was.
Yeah.
And that's when our results have just really exploded. The day I was finally able to say, fuck it, I have to trust myself, you know, because like I said, I kept thinking that I would have to do the typical performance stuff. You know, I would have to squat X amount or I would never do this dunk. And it's not true. I'm living proof. Like, I'm doing it and I don't fucking squat or deadlift. You see what I mean? Like, and that doesn't mean you can't. I literally just, like, right before this, I put onto my members only site a program of exactly how I help my athletes bench, squat, and deadlift. Why? Because I get athletes that, whether they like it or not, okay, coach, in 3 months, my baseball coach, my rugby coach, my whatever is going to test me on bench, squat, deadlift. What am I going to say? Sorry, I'm not going to help you, bro. You know what I mean? So it does, so I'm not saying you can't do those things. I'm just saying I don't. And I literally, even myself, couldn't trust myself. And I truly believed all these years, even as I was making a little upward progress, a little downward, a little more upward, a little downward, I still thought I would have to squat X amount of weight to dunk. And it just wasn't true. And now I just keep going higher and I still don't fucking squat.
Well, that's what's epic. I learned that a while ago, but I kept reading and looking, and you always see Instagram's the worst for it. You always see like power athletes, strength conditioning athletes. They're doing squat, bench, deadlift, you know, like a hip thrust, a hinge or whatever. And you're like, oh, that means I'm going to do it because, you know, they're doing it. I'm going to do it. But at the end of the day, you look at some of the best bodybuilders, like the big muscular bodybuilders that don't have pain, that like someone who comes to my mind is Frank Zane. Because his photo was on my laptop when I was in the end of high school, and I was like, he wasn't overly big. He had that classic look. And you look at him now, and I think out of any bodybuilder that ever lived, he has sustained the most as he got older, you know, regardless of the drugs, regardless of everything. And you hear of his training, and he doesn't count reps. He starts counting when things start burning, which means he's probably using less weight. He wasn't someone who was like squatting heavy or deadlifting heavy. And that's why Ronnie Coleman, bless the man, absolutely amazing. Yep. But man, his documentary made me cry. He's in a wheelchair. He can barely walk, but he's still getting up at 4 in the morning and training. But you look at Frank Zane, and he's got his own ranch. People come to him and train with him privately. And he's just like, you know, doing his training the same as what he was before. Maybe a little bit of yoga, maybe a little bit lighter, but he's still doing the same thing. For me, it's longevity. I think for you as well, it's longevity. Like, it's cool to be a great athlete for 2 years, but then when they wash down and get depression, all the suicide rates is out of control for American and Australian professional sports men.
Yep.
Because after they become injured, you know, so many rugby league players would get injured because the coaches just want the fastest, stronger player every game. They don't care what you're like when you're 50 or 40. They just want you to be a freaky strong athlete, score all the points, make the big tackles. And if you blow your knee, sweet, we'll get the next guy. We'll get the next guy because there's hundreds waiting. So coaches like you and myself, we're creating programs and creating a training philosophy about long-term, but you've proven that you can do it long-term. And the better you are long-term, you're probably going to play better now anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So that's all I wanted to do, was create this longevity approach. But time, you know, a few years go by and so many people don't sign up for my vertical jump training because they're like, it took years, you know, I want to jump higher now. You know what I mean? I've had people tell me straight up, how long did it take you to go from 19 to 41 inches? Mind you, the only human to ever go from sub 20 to over 40, right? So I could argue I've made the greatest change of anyone who's ever lived. Yeah. I could argue that. I said, well, about 6 years. They're, oh man, I don't have that kind of time. So no one's going to sign up for my 1/3 of an inch, my 1 centimeter a month vertical jump explosion program. But check in on those same fuckers a few years from now, right? When you're jumping heaps higher and they're not even jumping as high as they were, maybe they even had a knee surgery by now, right?
Yeah.
So in an effort to do things now, I think a lot of these teams screw themselves over. And I think they could be way more successful if they didn't think just about what's going to win games this season, but what's going to win games next season, the season after. And yeah, man, so it's interesting, that longevity approach. And when you were mentioning Frank Zane, I thought of a guy named Tom Platz. Now, Tom Platz came along a little bit later, and there's, you know, I'm not going to get into the bodybuilding world of things. I'm just going to point out that this guy was doing like sets of 50 squats, you know, and he was doing the most knee over toe exercises you've ever seen. Look at what he would do on a hack squat machine. But there's no way he was doing a quarter of the weight he could have done traditional style. And that guy, if you look him up, he still has great mobility. He's in like 50s, 60s. I don't know why he can still squat rock bottom like a newborn baby. So I wanted to tie that in with something that you had just mentioned maybe 5 minutes ago of what we see these athletes doing on social media. And having my own gym has given me a real world laboratory. And I think to me, there's nothing better than true observation rather than calculating metrics, which can get lost and confusing. And I will tell you that it's true that these freaky athletes will do scores on these deadlifts or whatever that will shock you. The problem is that if you try to get their ability to express, you know, all those force producers, but whether it's God who created them or what, however you want to believe their bodies got created, if you only try to copy their force production, but they were made with just as strong of absorbers, right? Because they were built balanced, just like I started out balanced. But all I tried to work on was the ability to produce the force, not the ability to handle it. So if you try to mimic the fancy stuff, the heavy stuff you see them doing, I say it straight up, you're fucking with God's plan. Yeah. And that's just the way I look at it. You know, you're not building the body the way it was actually designed. You're trying to copy the ability to produce force. And in doing so, you are, according to physics, not studies or some shit like that. Like, I mean, just according to like the laws of the universe, you are actually asking for more joint pain. You're asking for injuries. You're asking to be able to put more than you can handle.
I actually realized a while ago that me doing bodybuilding from the age of around 16, 17 till I think about 2 years ago is where I really, a year and a half ago is where I really pulled back and started doing other stuff. I still do some bodybuilding stuff. I realized that the years me looking at these pictures of guys and I'm like, all right, I want to be a pro bodybuilder or I want to be a fitness model. I basically started just because I wanted to get respected from guys and I wanted to be looked at by women in a better way than just geeky braces, big nose Jackson in high school. I wanted to be someone better. But the reason why I wanted that, just like you, is yeah, it's cool to be liked by people, but then I wanted to be a coach or someone, a role model. I really want to be a role model. And I wanted to be able to help people through that journey. But what I realized is all those years of bodybuilding, I was doing exactly what you explained. God gave me this body. I was playing soccer at a young age and I played pretty fucking good. I wasn't very talented. I didn't go to all my trainings, but I played every position I possibly could and I ran faster and harder than anyone else for the whole game. Like there was guys that were faster than me in a short 40 dash or 100 meters or whatever. There was guys that could shoot way better than me. There was guys that had better control of the ball. But over a game, I never subbed. I just kept going and going and going. And then from having that body, and I did skateboarding and all this other stuff, I was building the things in the right way. And then I went to bodybuilding and was like, I just kept getting the muscles that produce force bigger and bigger and bigger. So it makes absolute sense. I got my quads because I was competing in stage and you always see yourself in the front. I trained the fuck out of my quads. I barely ever hit hamstrings and calves properly because it was like bodybuilding muscles, big quads, small waist, big shoulders, big chest, big back. Yep. And then I kept building them. And then I went back to play soccer after having 5 or 6 years of not playing. And
oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I got shin splints instantly. Plantar fasciitis, I've still got. Yep. It still affects me. My heels, I can't stand on hard ground for more than 30 seconds without my heels feeling like they're bleeding.
Wow.
My control with my feet wasn't very good. My cardio was no near as good. So I'm like, okay. So, you know, this is to all those bodybuilders listening. Man, it's an epic sport. It got me to where I am to build my social media. It helped me. It taught me about food. It taught me about discipline. And I was more consistent than any other person I know. And that's why I got to America to compete. I competed in the nationals. But if only I had someone like you that could create a bodybuilding routine with a split for the other muscles as well. Because I would have just been a better bodybuilder, because if I got injured less, like I've fucked my shoulder, exactly. I've torn something in my chest, I've fucked my knees and ankles multiple times. I've always got bicep pain, always.
Oh, man.
I surf, I get bicep pain. So if I did the other way and worked on the things that it like affected the force, that absorbed the force, all the opposing muscles, more of like, you know, the range of motion, full range. I do believe I would have been just as good or a better bodybuilder for longer. But this is the way we got there. We can't go back now. And people listening to this, they may have injuries. They may want to be a really good basketball player. They may want to be good at any sport. They may want to be a bodybuilder still. All we're pleading is that you have a look at the opposing muscles, the weaker joints, the weaker ligaments, and find ways to get massive blood flow and massive pumps with low weight on the body, on the spine, on the joints. And I think that comes back to that same philosophy. Now, let's go with, when was it the first few people you were training where you were like, okay, this guy's as injured or has as many problem areas? Where do we start him? Like, instead of going to full training split, start him on the most simple stuff. And when did the light bulb go off that you're like, okay, now I need to share this with the world?
Well, I mean, just to dive right into it, a certain guy comes to mind, and he's actually my right-hand man in my online business, because I feel like to understand how I work, you know, you'd have to have a little deeper understanding than thinking this is a business for me. You know what I mean? Because it's not a fucking business.
Yeah.
It's literally who I am. And this guy started with a fucking 17-inch vertical. He was one of the only athletes I ever remember training that I start training him. I go, holy shit, he might have worse genetics than me. Okay. And he was 13. If he went to a bottom of a squat, he could not stand back up. He already had horrible knee pain. He then went off to boarding school and we stayed in touch, but it just wasn't realistic for him to like keep doing routines and stuff. And I didn't know enough at the time. Whereas now, like, I have workouts you can do with no equipment, you know, but I didn't know. I only knew so few things at the time. So I didn't know how to help him when he wasn't with me, nor did I have any understanding of technology and how to use online coaching. So around, I think for him, 16, 17 in that area, he actually had knee surgery and he then had another injury. And at this point he had moved back home. He quit boarding school and I really had to convince him to keep playing basketball. What was the chances? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This unathletic white guy with no athleticism already had one surgery. And at this point, a doctor was telling him he needed another surgery. And I had to just convince him, you don't give up. Don't give up. That's when he moved back home. He started training. Fast forward a couple years, and at 19, he's heading to college on a full ride basketball scholarship.
Wow.
He can dunk. And because he started out 17 inches, I mean, by this point, he's maybe like 27, 28 inches. You know what I mean? Like, he's still not an athletic guy. But if you knew where he came from, he's so much more athletic than he was. And I used to time like his sprints and stuff. And I mean, you could have timed this shit with a calendar. I mean, he was so slow. So here's the thing though. he was so passionate about it, like I was. For me, it was kind of like at a certain point, it was like, if I want to just pursue my own basketball career, I can't be here helping people. And I'm just one person. How am I going to live with myself traveling in the hotel, whatever? Playing that game is only a couple hours a week. How am I going to live with myself knowing I could be helping people, right? Yeah. And I think he felt that same thing. He has whatever it is inside of us that makes us believe that our purpose is, you know, that we get happier when something good happens for someone else that we're helping than for ourselves. So he actually didn't take the scholarship. I've never heard of such a thing. I've never heard of someone in America turning down a college basketball scholarship, free education, playing college basketball. He's young, whole life ahead of him. And he's my right-hand man at ATG. And he's kept jumping higher and his knees keep feeling better. And so I kind of put discipline on him of like, bro, like you have a responsibility just like me to keep proving this to the world, you know?
Yeah,
so he's the guy that I think of that made me realize and following the steps myself and then following through the steps with him and seeing how this stuff really just comes down to mathematics and physics. It's like, I just try to spread it. You know that, you know what I mean? I unapologetically try to spread it, and not a day goes by that someone isn't thanking me. You know what I mean? And these are people that if it weren't for social media, I never would have connected with them, you know? So that's my fuel. That's why I keep going. And one point I wanted to mention is if you look at yourself, if you had the perfect genetics, if you had the perfect trainer, what use would you be to help anybody else? You have to look at those bad things, quote unquote, that have happened to you and realize those might just be your greatest blessings. And I would hear this so many times of, oh my God, I'm so sorry of what you went through, or things like, are you kidding me? Those were the best blessings I ever had. You know what I mean? Because that sparks something that gives me a chance to learn and help others. So I'm seeing the future of you becoming the bulletproof bodybuilder and being able to help so many guys out there. Because for every guy trying to jump higher, there's 100 guys who just want to feel better about themselves and not be a fucking skinny fat twig. You know what I mean? Modern food and the exercise we get in schools, it's designed to give us bodies that we're insecure about, and that sets us up for failure the whole rest of our life. And you have the power to help all these people. And just think all these people, how much their life is going to suffer, not now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now. You see what I mean? By not learning how to take care of their body. So anything you could have gone through, you're not going to find the sympathy from me.
Yeah.
Not that I want you to have more problems. And I have to remind myself of that, of like, okay, don't be an idiot and try to make more shit bad happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't try to make shit intentionally happen so that I have to figure my way out of it. Because occasionally someone will have a problem that even I haven't seen. And I'm like, man, I wish I would have had that. No, I mean, you know what I mean? You have to have some reason within it. But I think guys like you and I have had enough shit happen that if we can figure out how to get out of that, that empowers us to help others. And then that's going to change the rest of their life. And for you, I don't know what it's like to have the muscles that you have. You know what I mean? And I never pretend to be something I'm not. So, you know, I'm going to keep grinding and try to keep sharing with you everything I know, but only you're going to be able to walk that path and share that for those guys. And the truth is, I would be trying to have a more idealistic physique like you have, but my style of basketball is that Stephen Curry, if you've heard of him, like that kind of I need to be the guy that's like super fucking annoying to keep running after. You know what I mean? And who can shoot from anywhere, and who, you know, in basketball, it's a foul if our bodies collide too hard. You know what I mean? So it's just a different world. And I train my body just to be the best at my style of basketball. So I can't walk that route, but you can. And I think that's a blessing to have endured what you went through. So
my absolute goal with this relationship and us knowing each other is it goes deeper than what people think and what maybe you've thought as well. I want to fix myself, and I'm not going to bullshit until it's done. And I'm going to work alongside you. I'm also using other things because I know it works well and it has worked previously. And that's hot yoga. It seems to be like a massive game changer for me. And the crazy thing is, people have been asking me the last couple of months, like how I've actually put size on in the last 6 months. And they're like, oh, you're getting back into bodybuilding, you're bulking up and stuff. I'm like, I'm mostly surfing and doing yoga and doing MMA. So I'm mostly doing jiu-jitsu, some Muay Thai, lots of surfing, and a little bit of yoga. But that seemed to increase the injuries just a little bit towards the end, because mixed martial arts is very, 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 it's a very, very strong sport. And I'm training with some really beast guys. So I've actually pulled back on that, and I'm doing more hot yoga and more flow yoga. I'm doing my own yoga, recording my own yoga, putting up on my IG and stuff on YouTube. And I think hot yoga and saunas in general is a massive key. So before we end this, I want to know, like, have you thought about adding some like hot, cold kind of stuff to your guys' training?
Great, great topic. And for those guys who, you know, just look up Tom Platz, who we mentioned, he would spend like an hour stretching his legs before leg day. And people would say that's absurd, you know what I mean, to do that. But I think that's why your muscles are looking even better, even though you're stretching right now and people think you're bodybuilding. And what I find for athleticism, the way you're finding it for muscles, is that the flexibility is not what makes the muscle bigger or more athletic, but it gives it the potential to. So some guy like yourself who's put in the work, now by improving your flexibility, your body may be able to open up more. And I fully agree with the hot yoga. And that follows one of my key principles. I live by a very small number of mantras that kind of just like help me stabilize. Is this in for me or is this out? And one of the key ones is the answer is more communication, not less. So I used to ice my knees 4 times a day and I was hooked on painkillers. When you stretch, and I remember actually when I was getting out of my issues, I actually used to go to a hot yoga place, which I totally forgot about. Totally forgot. It was the first thing I did, I think, that gave me any relief, because I was so tight and in pain that if it wasn't warm enough, I couldn't really communicate. You know what I mean? Anytime you feel that pain, your body shut off from that. You stop trying to go into that area. So I think the hot yoga is brilliant. I think the sauna is brilliant. The reason I don't do those things is because I'm absolutely 100% ethical in not doing anything outside of my exercises, because I have to know that the results I'm getting are from that. Because if other people build the best joint supplement, the best anti-inflammatory diet, how you're figuring out if someone masters hot yoga, sauna, all that stuff, but how do I know how much I'm getting out of my exercises that I spend my life innovating? You know, those are my babies. So I feel like it's my job to know exactly what I get out of them. So just like, I can't even imagine how much stuff gets thrown your way, because I'm a little snail on the road on social media compared to you. But, you know, I get offered joint supplements and things of that nature, free body work, laser treatments, all, but turn it down. I can't remember the last time I did anything to try to get extra assistance. You see what I mean? Because I need to know where it's coming from. But I think anyone out there could take that piece of advice is, okay, if someone's offering you some form of feeling better, is it more communication or is it less? And painkillers means less communication, and icing means less communication. You know, now on the flip side, like you said, like a hot cold, that's different. You dive into that plunge, that cold plunge, that's communication. But I'm talking about sitting there with ice packs until you can't feel your fucking knees.
Yeah, yeah.
I would do that until I couldn't feel my knees. I was doing that 4 times a day, shutting off the senses, taking painkillers to shut off the senses. So hopefully that makes sense. You know what I mean? Is that even though I can't even though I can't tell you like an exact protocol of what to do, I think when it comes to, you know, a general overall thing when trying to heal yourself, is this going to give me more communication or less? And that's also why I never advise pushing through pain in the gym, because if you do that, you might think you're going through it, but you're actually, anytime you feel that pain, you're going to be pulling back to whatever degree.
Yeah. So I'm going to throw one at you now. So I'm with you. We've got 30 seconds, let's say three exercises to give people who get knee and ankle pain.
Okay. Get on a treadmill, turn around, don't turn the treadmill on, reach your hands behind you, grab a hold of the handle so you're standing on there backwards like a fucking idiot, and get that wheel spinning as fast as you can. There's no one to save you now. You either get that wheel spinning or you don't. How fast can you get it spinning? Do it for 2 minutes. You're going to curse me. You're going to be burning so bad. But guess what? Remind yourself, it's better to be feeling that burn than to be feeling pain. So actually take that as a blessing. Enjoy the fact you're not in pain. Enjoy the fact you're burning. Then hop off, go stick your ass against a wall, walk your feet out until you feel your ankle stretching, and try to raise your toes without bending your knees. Now we're strengthening everything that builds up to the knee, the first line of defense for the knee. Give me 25 of those bad boys. If it's easy, you're not walking your feet out far enough. If you can't get your toes up, walk it in closer. And I would say safety-wise, I would stop right there. And just that alone, I've had more people on Instagram reach out and say, holy shit, you saved my knees. Now, I would advise then to build an abundance of protection so you don't, because why'd you fall into that in the first place? But depending on your activity or what you're doing or, you know, how, what else you've got going on in life, for many people, that's enough right there.
I love the top of knees over toes guy, what you just said there. I give you three and you're like, fuck it. We're going to do it in two. We're going to do the reverse. I call them reverse dead mills.
Yep.
Or reverse sled pulls, whatever they have at the gym. But I like it that everyone has an old treadmill or a broken one or one that works. Yeah. Whatever. That's perfect. And then like the videos on your Instagram, if anyone wants to see what Ben is talking about, he's got a video of him at the airport. And every time he's delayed or he's waiting for his flight, he just does.
I do it all the time. So yeah, if you just scroll my page, you'll find you can't miss it with me just propped up against the wall.
And what muscle is that, the tibialis?
Exactly. And it's probably the most, I think it's the most overlooked muscle in the body.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. So those are the things that I haven't been doing enough because they fucking suck and they burn.
Exactly. That's why you do have to remind yourself, hey, I'm blessed to be feeling this burn. I'm not in a wheelchair. I'm not missing a leg, right? I'm not in joint pain. I'm blessed. I'm not on the table looking down at my leg with lines drawn of where they're going to cut me up.
What I really love is, like, I haven't got any surgery and I've been asked to get surgery multiple times. After my motorbike accident, they were like, look, you need surgery. And I was like, no, I don't. I'm going to fix it myself. I'm very stubborn. And we know that the body has a way of healing. So I'm looking into it as a spiritual way as well. So I'm looking into the yoga as more than just the movement or the heat, but my meditating and giving my body a little bit of less stress. Because that's one thing that that I am a bit more pushing than what you would be, is I'm talking more about the mental health side, but you don't want to confuse people. So I like that you just go, do these exercises, you'll actually get better. But if someone has so much stress in their life, then sometimes that stress can go into their training stress. But either way, if they've got less injuries, they'll feel better anyway. So both will work. But what I'm really excited about is I think I want to travel over to your gym and bring my video camera and just film heaps of shit.
I'll take care. If you get here, I'll fully take care of you. I'll even look if I have any. We often have like airline miles. I'll look and see if I can cover the whole thing. I can't make any promises, but I can promise if you get here, you won't have to spend a dime. You know, this is my neck of the woods, and I'll even look into what I've got.
Where you're in Florida, in Clearwater.
Yep. That's
awesome,
right.
Awesome.
Small beach town. Perfect for training.
Oh, there's a beach close by.
Oh yeah. I mean, you walk a block behind ATG, you can see the water, and mate, you just I mean, take this. Take this bridge out to the, we were voted number one beach in America. Now they have to give this shit to somebody each year. So I'm not going to tell you it's the number one beach in America, but it's one of the chillest beaches in America for sure.
I'll look into it, man, because that's what's really cool about what I do. A lot of my stuff's online as well, and I work with brands, and I want to look at coming over and getting some like biohacking things done, some UV treatment, all this. I don't know. I learned a lot of stuff on the last podcast. And also I want to look into stem cells, and we can't get done in Australia. Wow. So it seems to be that Florida, like Miami, has a lot of rich, famous people. I'm sure there's a lot of stem cell places there. I'm really interested in biohacking as well as doing this, because I've done a lot of damage to my body, a lot of damage. So
yep.
I'm going to look into it.
I have a stem cell buddy. So, I mean, I would at least have connections for you to check that out. And since you're on this track, I will tell you one crazy story, which I could go get the medical records to prove it. I broke my wrist in college, and there's this bone on more towards the inside of the wrist, which they say gets the least blood flow of any bone in the body. They wanted me 8 weeks in a full arm cast, which, and then to a short arm cast, and I would have been out of basketball for the better part of a year, right?
Yeah.
I told these doctors no. They were like, what do you mean? I walked out of the office and I drove home to my mom, and I found a local place, a buddy of mine who's a physiotherapist guy. He let me go in just a short arm cast, right? It was like 2 to 3 weeks. And technically, like at a bare minimum, it's supposed to take 6 weeks, just like physiologically, like it's impossible for that bone to heal in less than 6 weeks. And I was in this short arm cast for 2 to 3 weeks. And when you're in a cast, you start to atrophy, right? So they ask you to come in after 2 to 3 weeks to put another cast on for 2 to 3 weeks. And my mom was doing these drills with me where I would basically just practice really getting in tune mentally with that bone. Because if you look at it on x-ray, how much fucking calcium does it really take? Barely any, right? It's like this tiny little thing, yet it causes you so much problems. But it's because you can only get so much blood flow there. So I actually felt in one of these sessions with my mom, I felt the bone go back. I mentally healed that bone. Hopefully you don't have that many people listening to this, because in my mind, I was like, I can't tell this story, but it's fucking true. And I go to this big medical facility where I have to get the new cast, and it's like the local hospital here. And the guy comes back. He's like, all right, you're all good to go. And then the main doctor comes in and is like, whoa, whoa, what are you talking about? He's only 2 to 3 weeks in. He needs to get his next cast. And he shows him the x-ray, and the bone is completely healed. And I have never had a problem with that bone since. And it is to this day, that is a medical miracle. But I felt that shit heal. I felt it. And I had no, you know, there was a little like scar tissue or whatever. But I've never had a problem with that bone since. And this was many years ago. And it healed in scientifically impossible time. But I spent every day putting my attention on that bone. I mean, for quite a bit of time. Whether you would want to call it meditating or whatever you'd want to call it, I actually put my mental energy, which you can measure, that, you know, it's real energy. Yeah. And so I put my energy on healing that thing every single day. I dropped out of college at that time. I didn't know if I'd go back, because I was going to miss my whole basketball season. If I wasn't going to play basketball, what the fuck was I going to do? It was right before the season. I was going to miss the entire season. And I hated being in class. So I put my mental energy on healing that thing, and I started the first game of the season and never looked back. Medical miracle. So I figured, You're thinking outside of the box. I don't share that story with anyone. You're the first. That's the first time I've ever publicly told that story outside of my family. But, you know, might be worth coming down to Clearwater.
I love that, dude, because if anyone wants to know more about what Ben's speaking about, just search Heal, H-E-A-L, on Netflix. It's a documentary about how they can actually measure energy and how placebo knee surgery and normal knee surgery. So basically they get 100 people for knee surgery over a year, 50, they actually cut the skin, but don't actually fix anything. And
50,
they cut and actually reattach the ligament. they had the same success rate with the placebo people, because in their head, they see the scar and they're like, oh, I've had surgery. And then they do all the rehab and they take it easier for a few months. The same success rate, because placebo is just so absolutely incredibly high. People who are drinking non-alcoholic wine at an event will act drunk without them knowing studies. Placebo is so strong. So if a few supplements give you motivation, like I see young guys taking supplements like pre-workout, and as much as I'm not a fan of caffeine and pre-workouts, I say, well, back when I was that age, I used it as a placebo to be like, I'm fucking Superman. I'm so strong, ready to train. Yeah. I'll train twice a day. And it's the same with other things. So right now I'm just spending as much time. I'm taking social media breaks on the weekend. I'm talking about a lot about on my Instagram. So if anyone's listening from my podcast and wants to know more about my social media detoxes, I basically have another old iPhone and I removed all apps off it and I put my SIM card in. And that's the phone that I take around on the weekend, and I leave my phone that has everything, emails, social media, and everything. I leave it in a drawer and I leave it off, and I tell myself that if I go to that drawer and turn it on, I need to write down what I'm going to do and why I'm going to go on my phone. There needs to be like an actual reason. And you do this automatically. That's what blows me away about you. Like, you don't fuck around on social media. You're like, post, 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 share, bang, back to work. I'm like, how does this man do so many videos but still train like 20 people and play basketball? It's just, it's incredible. So we're going to end the podcast there, man. I want to say a massive, massive thank you. And if you want to leave any last minute thoughts with listeners, you can say anything now.
I mean, honestly, I just say what's on my mind, and I just want to thank you and let you know you have my undying support, because that's incredibly motivating what you're doing right now with your phone and on the weekend, because someone else in your position could be thinking, how can I make more money off this? Instead, you're thinking, how can I learn to help other people? So that's really all that's on my mind. I thought I'd be exhausted by now. My plane landed 1:30 in the morning. I was up at 5 a.m. to start training. I thought I'd have no energy for this. All I drank is some coconut water, as you see me over here. And honestly, you've got me totally, you know, rejuvenated and motivated. So that's all I got, brother.
Same for me, bro. It's only lunchtime here, so I'm going to get going. I'm going to go on the beach. I'm actually going to go into the gym and do some of your program. So you've got your app now.
Don't work through any pain. Enjoy yourself. Remember that mind-muscle connection.
I'm going to start with the reverse deadmills and some of the tibialis raises. I've also been attaching a dumbbell to a booty band and doing the rotation ankle stuff.
Awesome.
I've got snowboarding in 5.5 weeks, so I'm going to be right on it. I'm going to be really working hard, and I can't wait to send you a photo while I'm at snowboarding being like, look, I've got no pain. I'm doing really well, and I'm just so positive about it. Thank you so much. So Ben's Instagram is @kneesovertoesguy, or is it just @kneesovertoes?
Yep, @kneesovertoesguy. You got
awesome, it. Awesome. And your gym is Athletic Truth Group?
Yeah, you can find us, because we're just a small gym here. We specialize online, so you can find our website at atgonlinecoaching.com.
Awesome. And that website is where they can look at the $49 monthly program that I'm doing.
Exactly. Yep. But I also leave my number on my social media, and, you know, I never fail to answer people's questions.
That's huge. I'll hold you to that when you got 200,000 followers, bro.
I'll have to figure something out by then.
Yeah. Thank you so much, bro. I'll try to get you to settle down and relax so you can go to sleep now. And I appreciate having you on the podcast. Thanks for everyone listening. If anyone found any value, if you can relate to any of the stories, if you really enjoyed Ben, we're going to have him again on the podcast in a few months. Hopefully we'll be at his actual place. Who knows? Yes. If you want to see me go over there, make sure you comment and support that. I'm sure we can get some really awesome viral videos of us going through the testing. And if I still have pain then, hopefully over like 10 days of staying there, I can get it fixed. Thank you so much for the listeners. Absolutely. Thank you again, Ben, and I'll see you later.
All right. Thank you, brother.